Chapter 141. More distinct reason than that he had taken it for granted that his mother would reserve it to herself and her partner. What now? She said again, impatiently. What is it? I did not mean, mother, that you should repeat what I have communicated. I think you had better not repeat it. Do you make that a condition with me? Well, yes. Observe, then. It is you who make this a secret, said she, holding up her hand, and not one. It is you, Arthur, who bring here doubts and suspicions and entreaties for explanations, and it is you, Arthur, who bring secrets here. What is it to me, do you think, where the man has been, or what he has been? What can it be to me? The whole world may know it, if they care to know it. It is nothing to me. Now, let me go. He yielded to her imperious but elated look, and turned her chair back to the place from which he had wheeled it. In doing so he saw elation in the face of Mr. Flintwinch, which most assuredly was not inspired by Flora. This turning of his intelligence, and of his whole attempt and design against himself, did even more than his mother's fixedness and firmness to convince him that his efforts with her were idle. Nothing remained but the appeal to his old friend Affery. But even to get the very doubtful and preliminary stage of making the appeal seemed one of the least promising of human undertakings. She was so completely under the thrall of the two clever ones, was so systematically kept in sight by one or other of them, and was so afraid to go about the house besides, that every opportunity of speaking to her alone appeared to be forestalled. Over and above that, Mistress Affery, by some means it was not very difficult to guess, through the sharp arguments of her liege lord, had acquired such a lively conviction of the hazard of saying anything under any circumstances, that she had remained all this time in a corner guarding herself from approach with that symbolical instrument of hers, so that, when a word or two had been addressed to her by Flora, or even by the bottle green patriarch himself, she had warded off conversation with the toasting fork like a dumb woman. After several abortive attempts to get Affery to look at him while she cleared the table and washed the tea service, Arthur thought of an expedient which Flora might originate. To whom he therefore whispered, "Could you say you would like to go through the house?" Now, poor Flora, being always in fluctuating expectation of the time when Clennam would renew his boyhood and be madly in love with her again, received the whisper with the utmost delight, not only as rendered precious by its mysterious character, but as preparing the way for a tender interview in which he would declare the state of his affections. She immediately began to work out the hint. "Ah, dear me, the poor old room," said Flora, glancing round, "looks just as ever, Mrs. Clennam. I am touched to see, except for being smokier, which was to be expected with time, and which we must all expect and reconcile ourselves to being whether we like it or not, as I am sure I have had to do myself, if not exactly smokier, dreadfully stouter, which is the same or worse. To think of the days when Papa used to bring me here the least of girls, a perfect mass of chilblains, to be stuck upon a chair with my feet on the rails and stare at Arthur, pray excuse me, Mr. Clennam, the least of boys and the frightfulest of frills and jackets here, yet Mr. F. appeared a misty shadow on the horizon, paying attentions like the well-known specter of some place in Germany beginning with a B, is a moral lesson inculcating that all the paths in life are similar to the paths down in the north of England, where they get the coals and make the iron and things graveled with ashes. Having paid the tribute of a sigh to the instability of human existence, Flora hurried on with her purpose. "Not that at any time," she proceeded, "its worst enemy could have said it was a cheerful house, for that it was never made to be, but always highly impressive. Fond memory recalls an occasion in youth here, yet the judgment was mature, when Arthur confirmed habit. Mr. Clennam took me down into an unused kitchen eminent for moldiness, and proposed to secrete me there for life, and feed me on what he could hide from his meals, when he was not at home for the holidays, and on dry bread in disgrace which at that halcyon period too frequently occurred, would it be inconvenient or asking too much to beg to be permitted to revive those scenes and walk through the house? Mrs. Clennam, who responded with a constrained grace to Mrs. Finching's good nature in being there at all, though her visit before Arthur's unexpected arrival was undoubtedly an act of pure good nature, and no self-gratification, intimated that all the house was open to her. Flora rose and looked to Arthur for his escort. Certainly, said he, aloud. And Affery will light us, I dare say. Affery was excusing herself with don't ask nothing of me, Arthur. When Mr. Flintwinch stopped her with why not? Affery, what's the matter with you, woman? Why not, Jade? Thus expostulated with, she came unwillingly out of her corner, resigned the toasting fork into one of her husband's hands, and took the candlestick he offered from the other. Go before, you fool. Said Jeremiah. Are you going up, or down, Mrs. Finching? Flora answered, down. Then go before, and down, you Affery, said Jeremiah. And do it properly, or I'll come rolling down the banisters, and tumbling over you. Affery headed the exploring party. Jeremiah closed it. He had no intention of leaving them. Clennam looking back, and seeing him following three stairs behind, in the coolest and most methodical manner exclaimed in a low voice, is there no getting rid of him? Flora reassured his mind by replying promptly, why though not exactly proper Arthur, and a thing I couldn't think of before a younger man, or a stranger still I don't mind him, if you so particularly wish it, and provided you'll have the goodness not to take me too tight. Wanting the heart to explain that this was not at all what he meant, Arthur extended his supporting arm round Flora's figure. Oh my goodness me, said she. You are very obedient indeed really, and it's extremely honorable and gentlemanly in you, I am sure, but still at the same time, if you would like to be a little tighter than that I shouldn't consider it intruding. In this preposterous attitude, unspeakably at variance with his anxious mind, Clennam descended to the basement of the house. Finding that wherever it became darker than elsewhere, Flora became heavier, and that when the house was lightest she was too. Returning from the dismal kitchen regions, which were as dreary as they could be, Mistress Affery passed with the light into his father's old room, and then into the old dining room. All was passing on before like a phantom, that was not to be overtaken, and neither turning nor answering when he whispered, Affery, I want to speak to you. In the dining room, a sentimental desire came over Flora, to look into the dragon closet which had, so often swallowed Arthur in the days of his boyhood, not improbably because, as a very dark closet, it was a likely place to be heavy in. Arthur, fast subsiding into despair, had opened it, when a knock was heard at the outer door. Mistress Affery, with a suppressed cry, threw her apron over her head. What? You want another dose? Said Mr. Flintwinch. You shall have it, my woman, you shall have a good one. Oh! You shall have a sneezer, you shall have a teaser. In the meantime, is anybody going to the door? Said Arthur. In the meantime, I am going to the door, sir, returned the old man so savagely, as to render it clear that in a choice of difficulties he felt he must go, though he would have preferred not to go. Stay here the while, all. Affery, my woman, move an inch, or speak a word in your foolishness, and I'll treble your dose. The moment he was gone, Arthur released Mrs. Finching. With some difficulty, by reason of that lady misunderstanding his intentions, and making arrangements with a view to tightening instead of slackening. Affery, speak to me now. Apostrophe apostrophe, don't touch me, Arthur. Apostrophe apostrophe, she cried, shrinking from him. Don't come near me. He'll see you. Jeremiah will. Don't. Apostrophe, he can't see me, apostrophe, returned Arthur, suiting the action to the word, if I blow the candle out. Apostrophe, he'll hear you, apostrophe, cried Afri. He can't hear me, apostrophe, returned Arthur, suiting the action to the words again, if I draw you into this black closet, and speak here. Why do you hide your face? Apostrophe, apostrophe, because I am afraid of seeing something. Apostrophe, you can't be afraid of seeing anything in this darkness, Afri. Apostrophe, yes I am. Much more than if it was light. Apostrophe, why are you afraid? Apostrophe, apostrophe, because the house is full of mysteries and secrets, because it's full of whisperings and counselings, because it's full of noises. There never was such a house for noises. I shall die of them, if Jeremiah don't strangle me first. As I expect he will. Apostrophe, I have never heard any noises here, worth speaking of. Apostrophe, ah. But you would, though, if you lived in the house, and was obliged to go about it as I am, apostrophe, said Afri, and you'd feel that they was so well worth speaking of, that you'd feel you was nigh bursting through not being allowed to speak of them. Here's Jeremiah. You'll get me killed. Apostrophe, my good Afri, I solemnly declare to you, that I can see the light of the open door on the pavement of the hall, and so could you, if you would uncover your face and look. Apostrophe, I durst do it, apostrophe, said Afri, I durst never, Arthur. I'm always blindfolded, when Jeremiah and a looking, and sometimes even when he is. Apostrophe, he cannot shut the door without my seeing him, apostrophe, said Arthur. You are as safe with me, as if he was 50 miles away. Apostrophe, I wish he was.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Afri.
Afri, I want to know what is amiss here. I want some light thrown on the secrets of this house. Apostrophe, I tell you, Arthur, apostrophe, she interrupted. Noises is the secrets, rustlings, and stealings about, tremblings, treads overhead and treads underneath. Apostrophe, but those are not all the secrets. Apostrophe, I don't know, apostrophe, said Afri. Don't ask me no more. Your old sweetheart ain't far off, and she's a blabber. Apostrophe, his old sweetheart, being in fact so near at hand, that she was then reclining against him in a flutter, a very substantial angle of 45 degrees, here interposed to assure Mistress Afri with greater earnestness than directness of asseveration, that what she heard, should go no further, but should be kept inviolate, if on no other account on Arthur's sensible of intruding in being too familiar Doyce and Clennam's. Apostrophe, I make an imploring appeal to you, Afri, to you, one of the few agreeable early remembrances I have, for my mother's sake, for your husband's sake, for my own, for all our sakes. I am sure you can tell me something connected with the coming here of this man, if you will. Apostrophe, why, then I'll tell you, Arthur, apostrophe, returned Afri, Jeremiah's coming. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, indeed he is not. The door is open, and he is standing outside, talking. Apostrophe, I'll tell you then, apostrophe, said Afri, after listening, that the first time he ever come he heard the noises his own self. What's that, he said to me. I don't know what it is, I says to him, catching hold of him, but I have heard it over and over again. While I says it, he stands a looking at me, all of a shake, he do. Apostrophe, has he been here often? Apostrophe, apostrophe, only that night, and the last night. Apostrophe, what did you see of him on the last night, after I was gone? Apostrophe, apostrophe, them two clever ones had him all alone to themselves. Jeremiah come a dancing at me sideways, after I had let you out, he always comes a dancing at me sideways, when he's going to hurt me, and he said to me, now, Afri, he said, I am a coming behind you, my woman, and a going to run you up. So he took and squeezed the back of my neck in his hand, till it made me open my mouth, and then he pushed me before him to bed, squeezing all the way. That's what he calls running me up, he do. Oh, he's a wicked one. Apostrophe, and did you hear or see no more, Affery? Apostrophe, apostrophe, don't I tell you I was sent to bed, Arthur? Here he is. Apostrophe, I assure you he is still at the door. Those whisperings and counselings, Affery, that you have spoken of. What are they? Apostrophe, how should I know? Don't ask me nothing about them, Arthur. Get away. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but my dear Affery, unless I can gain some insight into these hidden things, in spite of your husband and in spite of my mother, ruin will come of it. Apostrophe, don't ask me nothing, apostrophe, repeated Affery. I have been in a dream forever so long. Go away, go away. Apostrophe, you said that before, apostrophe, returned Arthur. You used the same expression that night, at the door, when I asked you, what was going on here. What do you mean by being in a dream? Apostrophe, I am a going to tell you. Get away. I shouldn't tell you, if you was by yourself, much less with your old sweetheart here. Apostrophe, it was equally vain for Arthur to entreat, and for Flora to protest. Affery, who had been trembling and struggling the whole time, turned a deaf ear to all adjuration, and was bent on forcing herself out of the closet. I'd sooner scream to Jeremiah than say another word. I'll call out to him, Arthur, if you don't give over speaking to me. Now here's the very last word I'll say afore I call to him. If ever you begin to get the better of them two clever ones your own self, you ought to it, as I told you, when you first come home, for you. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.